group of people. Anybody remember in group number one what the name of that was, those people were? What was the name of those people that he was fighting against? Group one. Hello? Say it again. Ammonites? Okay, good. That means somebody's awake. That's good. All right, Ammonites. And during the war, they had the Ephraimites had actually killed a couple of princes. You remember who those were, the Ephraimites? That was against the Midianites, that's right. That was Gideon, wasn't it? Right. All right, we're talking about different stories tonight. All right. So anyway, Jephthah had gone to battle, and now he had asked God to give him victory. And in the process of doing that, he made a vow. And the vow was that whatever returned, come out when he returned from his home, whatever came out of his house, he would offer for a burnt offering. Well, as we look at Judges, the 11th chapter, verse 31, it says, "Then it will be that whatever comes out the doors of my house to meet me, when I return in peace from the people of Ammon, shall surely be the Lord's. And I will offer it up as a burnt offering." Well, when he came back, his daughter came out to meet him. She was elated that he had won the victory. And so she came out with timbrels and dance and just joyous to see her dad home. But he wasn't happy to see her come out of the house, because he knew what had to happen. What was it that he had to do then? Offer her for a sacrifice. Well, we're going to talk about that tonight. He told her, "You have brought me very low, because you've become one of those who trouble me. I've opened my mouth, and now that he had vowed this vow, he cannot go back on his word." Why? Why could he not go back on his word? Number two. There's a reason. Why couldn't he go back and just say, "Oh, I made a mistake"? When you make a vow, you were required to keep it, bar nothing. That's right. Now, we're going to talk a little bit about that in just a minute, a little bit more in detail. But his daughter replied to him, "Father, you have made a vow to Jehovah. Whatever you vowed, you go on and fulfill it. But let me ask a favor. Let me ask just one favor. Let me and my companions go to the mountain, and there, let me bewail my virginity, I and my companions." What does it mean to bewail? You ever thought about what's bewailing? Weeping, yeah. Crying, uncontrollably probably. But Jephthah told her that she could go, she and her companions could go for 2 months and then return. And he said to her, and she said to him, "Father, do as you have vowed," basically. And she did not know a man in her lifetime. And it was a custom in Israel to go out each year and praise the daughter of Jephthah because of what she had done. When Jephthah came home, you know, he may have contemplated maybe a servant coming out to meet him, or someone other than his only child. She was his only daughter, only child that he had. And so it was very disturbing to him when she came out to meet him. One of the most debated questions, I guess, is what in the Bible is whether Jephthah offered his daughter as a burnt offering, whether he burned her as one would burn a sacrifice. More studies of the pros and cons might can help you. I don't know. You just have to figure it out for yourself, kind of. We're going to go over some of that tonight. So sometimes your class can get kind of bogged down on these kind of things, and I'm not sure that we can even come up with a conclusion for it. But there are those who believe he offered his daughter as a burnt sacrifice. And we read Judges 11, where he said, whatever comes out of my house, I'm going to offer as a burnt offering. The text states that Jephthah vowed a vow, and whoever met him upon his victory upon the Ammonites, he would offer them. He did with her according to his vow, we find in verse 39 of chapter 11. He did that. These words, taken at face value, indicate that he offered his daughter as a bleeding sacrifice to Jehovah. All right, the literal meaning, the literal meaning of Jephthah's vow is whoever comes out to meet me, not whatever, the literal meaning or literal translation. So whoever comes from the door of my house will be offered. Jephthah must have been thinking of probably some other person. In Leviticus, the 27th chapter, no devoted thing that a man shall devote to Jehovah of all that he hath, whether man or beast or field, shall be sold or redeemed. All right, so his daughter being devoted to the Lord, there is no way he could redeem her at all. There was provisions made where you could redeem certain things. But those things that were most holy to Jehovah, you could not redeem. They cannot be ransomed. Jephthah was very specific in his vow. He would offer a burnt offering. A burnt offering, they were totally burned except the skin and the hide, you remember, of animal sacrifices. This signified a total dedication in offering this particular these burnt offerings like this. As we look at Exodus, the 29th chapter, in verse 18 it says, "And you shall burn the whole ram on the altar. It is a burnt offering to the Lord. It is a sweet aroma. An offering made by fire to the Lord." And Leviticus 1:9 says, "But he shall wash its entrails, its legs with water, and the priest shall burn all on the altar as a burnt sacrifice, an offering made by fire, a sweet aroma to the Lord." In verse 13, "But he shall wash the entrails and legs with water, the priest shall bring it all and burn it on the altar. It is a burnt sacrifice, an offering made by fire, a sweet aroma to the Lord." You can kind of get the idea that this was a specific sacrifice that had to be carried out by who? Who did the sacrifice? The priest. Yeah, the priest did. Now, we're running into some problems if you'll think about it just a minute. Because what did Jephthah say he was going to do? He was going to offer his, whoever came out, as a burnt offering. Yeah. So, All right. So we look at a few examples of someone who'd made a vow similar to this, not the same. When Hannah vowed to give her son to God, that he was devoted to God, and she worded her vow to indicate that this was going to be a Nazarite vow, that he would be a Nazarite. One of the dedications to God for a period of time, and in Samuel's case, this was for his entire life. 1 Samuel, the first chapter. And when she made a vow and said, O Lord of hosts, if you will indeed look on the affliction of your handmaid, remember me and not forget your handmaid, but will give your maidservant a male child, then I will give him to the Lord all the days of his life. And no razor shall come on his head. That's the Nazarite vow, basically, that was made, you might say, by Hannah, before Samuel was born, dedicating him to the Lord all of his life. And we know that he, even from a small child, when he was weaned, remember she carried him to the tabernacle. He stayed there with, what was that guy's name? Eli. All right, good. Just check and see if y'all are still awake. All right. So, Jephthah's vow was different because nothing lived through a burnt offering. Jephthah lived in the times of idolatrous worship around him where humans were sacrificed to these gods of Molech, not uncommon during his day. Leviticus, the 18th chapter and verse 21, and you shall not let any of your descendants pass through the fire to Molech, nor shall you profane the name of your God, I am the Lord. They were not to let any of their children or descendants or even anybody connected with them be offered as a sacrifice to this god, Molech. And that would be throwing them in a fire, is what it amounted to. So, the human sacrifice would not be a shock to Jephthah. Human sacrifices were an abomination to Jehovah. Those who deny that Jephthah offered her as a sacrifice look at it kind of this way. Human sacrifices were an abomination to Jehovah, prohibited upon pains of death. Leviticus 18:21, we just read that. In chapter 20 and verse 2 talks about, and again you shall say to the children of Israel, whoever of the children of Israel or a stranger who dwells in Israel, who gives any of his descendants to Molech, he shall surely be put to death. So, anyone who would offer their children or even a stranger or whatever to this god Molech, which was actually putting them through a fire and killing them, basically, they were to be put to death. So, this is some of the reasoning that some of the people look at, whether he actually, did a burnt offering or not. In Deuteronomy 12:1, you shall not worship the Lord your God in that way. For every abomination to the Lord which he hates, they have done to their gods. For they burn even their sons and daughters in the fire to their gods. That's what Moses was talking to the children of Israel and telling them that this was an abomination to God to actually give their children to these gods and to burn them with fire. In chapter 18, beginning in verse 9, it says, when you come into the land which the Lord your God has given you, you shall not learn to follow the abominations of those nations. that tells us that a lot of these nations were actually throwing their children in the fire as a worship to Molech or other gods as well, possibly. Molech was more known for than the other one. There's no rebuke from God for this vow that Jephthah made. You would think, Jephthah, this would be an abomination to me. But God does not do that. As a matter of fact, instead, his name is listed in Hebrews 11, Jimmy brought out, as one of the faithful. So, kind of leaves you in a quandary, doesn't it? Whether he actually did this or not. God stopped Abraham from offering his son, if you remember. He stayed his hand and would not let him kill his son. During the days of the wicked kings such as Ahaz and Manasseh, they offered their sons as sacrifice to false gods. We find that in 2 Kings, the 16th chapter, in verse 3. But he walked in the ways of the kings of Israel. Indeed, he made his son pass through the fire according to the abomination of the nations whom the Lord had cast out from before the children of Israel. You get a picture of why God wanted these people away from his children. They were terrible people. What lesson can we learn from that? We need to learn that our children, you know, we need to teach them the kind of people to be around and how to deal with problems rather than just take off. We need to remind them that they need to be faithful to the Lord. That's what God wanted his people. He kept telling them, I'll be your God, you be my people. How many times have we gone over that? Dozens of times that God has said that to his people as they left Egypt and they did not follow him. If Jephthah did offer his daughter as a sacrifice, there were some details pertaining to the law that were actually broken. So, let's look at them. According to the law, sacrifices, including burnt offerings, were to be offered at the sanctuary. We find that in Deuteronomy, the 12th chapter, and verse 6. There you shall take your burnt offering, your sacrifices, your tithe, the heave offering of your hand, your vowed offerings, your freewill offerings, and the firstborn of your herds and flocks. Those are the things that were to be included in the burnt offerings there. Verse 13 and 14 goes on to say, take heed to yourself that you do not offer your burnt offerings in every place that you see. So you don't just offer a burnt offering wherever. They had to be at the sanctuary. But in the place which the Lord chooses in one of your tribes, there you shall offer your burnt offering. So there were designated places for that to happen. This law was strictly observed unless a special occasion was commanded by God. You think of a special occasion later on where a sacrifice was to be made. And the man just couldn't wait for the priest to get there. Anybody remember who that was later on? Saul. Yeah, that's right. Good. Very good. Saul was the man. He couldn't wait for Samuel to get there, so he went on and offered the sacrifice. And that was an abomination to God. And so this is something to keep in mind as we are going through this. Unless he carried her that's Jephthah's daughter, carried her to the priest to offer her for him. You know, that would have been not okay with God, because the priest is the ones that did the sacrifices. If that be the case, the priests were involved in a sacrifice which was an abomination to Jehovah. Well, we just keep getting deeper and deeper in debt, don't we? You begin to understand that this was a real problem with the vow that Jephthah made. Burnt offerings could only be male. Leviticus 1st chapter tells us that. This was a female. His daughter was a female. So, brings on another problem. Are we to conclude that Jephthah could offer a human sacrifice, an abomination to the Lord, that he could offer it in an unscriptural place? Would he ignore the restriction that it be a male? Jephthah was a very religious man, and we learn that in Judges, the 11th chapter, beginning in verse 10. And the elders of Gilead said to Jephthah, "The Lord be a witness between us if we do not do according to your word." So the Lord was with him in all of this. Kind of brings on some question, doesn't it? Exactly what's going on? Well, he had not shown himself to be a rash in his conduct at all. Jephthah, he wasn't a rash person. However, a lot of people say Jephthah made a rash vow. Don't we hear that? But he was not a rash type person. He declared that Jehovah had given Israel the disputed land, if you remember. He asked for help in defeating the enemy, and he was not given over to idolatrous practices, nor the practice of human sacrifice. The daughters of Israel went yearly to lament or to commemorate this event. Therefore, it must have been proper to remember that occasion. God wouldn't have permitted them to go and celebrate or commemorate this if it had been an action that was not right with him, if it was an abomination, in other words. Would it be proper to commemorate it? Something that was an abomination to God, like a human sacrifice. A total dedication of a person to the service of Jehovah would be commended, if that indeed is what this actually was. The family would also have honor. Vows were voluntary, free will sacrifices to God. One could vow to give an animal, could vow to give a field, a house, or other possessions. Those were all acceptable. And even a person, as in the case of Samuel. Each type of vow had rules and regulations that were involved with it. If it were a clean animal, it could be sacrificed. If it was an unclean animal, then it would be used as a work animal around the tabernacle, or money could be paid according to its value. Okay, an assessed value would be put on it. And we learned that in Leviticus, the 27th chapter. That's basically what it says there. Vows. If it were property that was vowed, it would become either permanent inheritance of the Levite, or a value would be assessed on it, and plus one-fifth, that the owner could pay and retain the property. So there were certain things and stipulations that go with these different types of vows. If it was a person, then that person either served in some capacity of work for the tabernacle, or appointed price was paid as a gift to the Lord. This was set forth in Leviticus 27, verse 3 through 8. vowing a person was not an unheard of thing. It was common, and rules were given in the law for handling such vows. Vows were made with a specific person or thing to be dedicated. The item would be given if feasible, otherwise an assessed value was paid. The law made provisions for a rash vow. We talked about this, Jephthah making a rash vow. Was this a rash vow? Well, there were provisions made for a rash vow. And if that would be the case, that it was classified as a rash vow, then all he'd had to do was follow the rash vow, stipulations, that went along with it. If a man made a rash vow and realized he couldn't keep it, he was commanded to offer a sacrifice for his sin of vowing rashly. Well, he could not complete the vow he made in Leviticus, the fifth chapter, as we think of that, by being his daughter being burnt offering. So certain things could not be vowed, anything that was devoted to God. What one thing you think of would be devoted to God? Already. The firstborn, all right? The firstborn animal, the firstborn son, they were already dedicated. You could not vow a vow involving them. And tithes that you normally get, you couldn't do a vow according to your tithes. The spoils from a dedicated city, you remember Jericho when they took it. The spoils from it, you remember that was all dedicated to God when they took the city, even though one man took something. What was that man's name? Number three? Anybody remember? That man's name? Anybody remember? Y'all letting me down. Number two, what was that man's name? Achan. All right, Achan. He took some. Hey, it's kind of tough tonight, Randy. But that's the kind of thing he's talking about. Things that were dedicated to a city, and there were other cities as well that had been taken that were dedicated as well, and they could not, vow any of those things. A person guilty of a crime or of idolatry was devoted to God for destruction. He could not be vowed. Notwithstanding, Leviticus 27:28-29 says, notwithstanding, no devoted thing that a man shall devote to the Lord of all he hath, both man and beast, ill possessed, he possesses shall be sold or redeemed. Every devoted thing is most holy to the Lord. None devoted which shall be devoted of men shall be redeemed, but shall surely be put to death. All right. Paying a specific vow, amount of money to fulfill his vow or offering a specific sacrifice to pay the penalty for making a rash vow would seem to be a simple way out for Jephthah along this line. You know, look, I made a rash vow, he could just, you know, no, he couldn't do that. If it was a simple solution, then why was he so terribly upset when his daughter came out? He knew he had to fulfill that vow. The way it was made, he had to do that. His daughter would be totally dedicated to God. His vow was whoever came out would be offered to God as an OLAB. What in the world is OLAB? Anybody know? I put it in there and I forgot to look it up. OLAB, which is the Old Testament, is usually a burnt offering, but can mean something totally dedicated to God. Basically, what that is. Young's literal translation reads like this. Then it hath been that which at all cometh out of the doors of my house to meet me in my turning back in peace from Ben-Ammon. It hath been to Jehovah, or I have offered it up for it, a burnt offering. The New Revised Standard reads like this. Then whoever comes out of the doors of my house to meet me when I return victorious from the Ammonites shall be the Lord's to be offered up by me as a burnt offering. And then we have the Living Bible and the New Living Translation. Meanwhile, Jephthah had vowed to the Lord that if God would help Israel conquer the Ammonites, then when he returned home in peace, the first person coming out of his house to meet him would be sacrificed as a burnt offering to the Lord. And the other translation there, I will give to the Lord the first thing coming out of my house to greet me when I return in triumph. I will sacrifice as a burnt offering. The dedicated thing could have been a servant, family member. He intended the sacrifice to be a costly one because of the great favor that he had asked of God to victory over these Ammonites. But when his daughter came out, he knew that she would be totally dedicated to God for all her life. What difference would it have made if it had been a servant or another human being? What difference would it have made? Jephthah would not have cried as much. No, go ahead. Right. And that may have been what he was expecting.
But they weren't following the law of this thing very well.
No.
And it was not a good time to hear this one. And I can't see Jephthah vowing to offer a human.
Well, that's part of the difference, you know, here.
And he's listed in Hebrews 11, that's correct. But so is Samson. And his character is not stellar either.
Right.
So to me, that's no defense that he did not offer her as well. I don't have to know what he did
right.
for my salvation. I don't.
That's
have
exactly
to know.
Right. That's right.
But I'm having a hard time accepting that my verdict says whatever. But I can't see that being true.
Yeah. Well, there are some translations that do say however, and from what I saw, the literal translation was whoever, but needless to say, Jeff is saying it doesn't affect our salvation one way or the other, but Samson was also listed as a great man of faith, and he didn't have a very good character if you think about it, and yet and Jephthah is mentioned in the same Hebrews 11, same thing, along with a lot of other men as well. And you study this and on your own and come to your conclusion. That's true. They did go out and commemorate that. Whether that was actually a burnt offering or whether it was total dedication. That's what this brought out. And her life was dedicated to the Lord. That's just the pros and cons of it kind of. And Jeff was saying that he felt like that Jephthah was expecting an animal to come out to meet him when he came home instead of a human. In other words, he just wasn't expecting that at all. He did. Made the vow to God. Yep. That's right. God accepted that vow. God probably did know exactly who was going to come out. Knowing. See if he would fulfill his vow or not. I don't know. We do know that it goes on to tell us that when his daughter came out, she knew that she would be totally dedicated to God for all of her life, whether that was a burnt offering or whether or not she would remain a virgin, never marry, not lead a normal life, total service to God. This could be celebrated. Whereas it would be difficult to celebrate a sacrifice, burnt offering. Now, I understand where you're coming from. Yeah, I understand. This was Jephthah's only child. He would have no other descendants. His lineage basically would stop. The men of Ephraim heard of the war against the Ammonites and went to Jephthah and asked, "Why did you not call us? We'll burn down your house. Since you didn't call us." Why would they want to go to war? Spoils of war, yeah, a lot of it. Jephthah called the men of Gilead to come and help. And so they came, and a band of nobodies that Ephraim thought Jephthah was and his men began to run them back across the Jordan. Jephthah's men were waiting at the fords of the Jordan. And when a person would come from the Ephraimites, they would require them to say a word. Can anybody pronounce it? What does it say? Shibboleth. Shibboleth. The people from Ephraim, when they would come by, they couldn't say that. They would leave the H sound out of it, and they would say Shibboleth. They would immediately be killed. 42,000 men of Ephraim fell in battle. Jephthah judged Israel for 6 years, and he included as a man of faith in Hebrews 11. All right. These were basically where the fords of the river were, right underneath Galilee, about the Jabbok, and just above the Dead Sea. End of the lesson. Amazing. Now, what I have got, I've got a few pictures here of the Jordan. It could not be crossed except at certain locations called fords. You kind of see how fast the Jordan River runs. Most places, there were a few places where it did not run fast. And some of those, you can see this one, it's not extremely hazardous at that point. Went too far. This is a hill country on the east side, on the east of Jerusalem. I thought y'all might want to be interested in seeing some of those. Okay, our time is just about up. Thank y'all for your comments, and study it on your own a little bit more. See what you come up with. And there's pros and cons both ways. It says that he would offer her as a burnt offering. I don't have a doubt but what he fulfilled his obligation. He's a man of faith. All right. Thank y'all for your comments.